Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. Coming up on today's podcast, we have an interview with Dennis Watkins and Nathan Allen from the House Theater of Chicago. They talk to Tom Williams about their newest show, The Sparrow. Also, we have an audio review of The Sparrow, and of course, Chicago's theater news. So sit back and relax, and get ready to talk some theater.
This is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our special guests this week are two of the founding members of the House Theater of Chicago, Dennis Watkins and Nathan Allen. Dennis, say hello.
Hello.
And Nathan?
Hello.
I've got to ask you guys, congratulations on a great show.
Thanks.
Sparrow is probably the best thing that you guys have done yet in the last 4 years.
Oh, thanks very much.
Thank you.
So tell us now, Nathan, tell us how it started, how you got, what made you do The Sparrow at this point?
The Sparrow was sort of in the back of my mind between when we were doing the trilogy, between Curse of the Crying Heart and I guess when I started writing Valentine Victorious Part 3. The trilogy was always intended to be an experiment in figuring out what kinds of stories we could tell.
You're talking about The Melancholy Kid?
The Melancholy Kid. Okay. And Sam Elton and The Melancholy Kid, Curse of the Crying Heart, and Valentine Victorious. And it was an active experiment and sort of formed the heart of our company conversation for those years anyway, in what kinds of stories we wanted to tell. And for me personally, what sort of world I wanted to imagine in.
Okay.
And so The Sparrow came about as I was getting more and more frustrated with not being able to make the trilogy fit for myself as a writer. I don't consider myself much of a writer, and was learning the answers to the questions that I'd set out for. And The Sparrow is kind of a response to the trilogy in that way, I think, for me as a storyteller.
What's the premise of The Sparrow for our listeners?
It's about a small farm town in Illinois, Spring Farm, Illinois, that has suffered a bus accident where they lose the entire second grade class on a field trip, and recalls Russell Banks's book, The Sweet Hereafter. And also there actually was a bus accident in Fox River Grove
a number of years ago.
Sort of a similar thing, but a fictionalization of that anyway, where this town is trying to grieve still 10 years later as that class that they lost is entering its senior year. So there's in the high school, there is a missing class of students. There was one survivor to this bus crash who was sent away to a home for troubled children, and she is returning to Spring Farm now to get her high school diploma so that she can go to college. And so it's kind of a story about how this girl and this town come together about the tragedy and try and heal each other. And then, of course, the girl has superpowers.
Of course.
That's the fun part.
It's the house show. And right. Dennis, you're in the show.
I am in the show. I play the high school football coach, Coach Jerry Adams.
Basketball coach.
basketball coach. I really am in the play. I know what's going on. basketball coach, and I play one of the high school students as well.
Okay, but Nathan, you directed this show, right?
That's right.
You come up with the premise, and you had two of your people in your ensemble write the show.
So in Dave Da Vinci Saves the Universe, Jake Minton and Chris Matthews wrote that script, and I directed that a couple years ago, and we just had a really good relationship as a threesome of storytellers, and
that was very good. I remember that.
Thanks. And the collaboration between the three of us was really fun and fruitful. So when I had conceived of The Sparrow or whatever, I knew that I kind of wanted to get them on board with it again as co-writers, and the three of us would make it happen. And it's kind of hard to say exactly how it works,
Yeah, I was going to
ask. Because it's kind of, because it's kind of, yeah.
Three is
it's magic, is yeah. how it works. So it works
does
like
it
magic.
Get a little bloody?
Because it's magic. It does get bloody, and that's not a bad thing. But Jake and Chris write all the dialogue, and the three of us collaborate on everything. But there's a lot in The Sparrow that is very physical storytelling and not necessarily verbal.
And there's a lot of movement, language, a lot of dance. Yeah.
So the story was initially conceived as just a narrative that bumping off of my initial ideas that the three of us sat down and wrote it without dialogue, but just as a story, which turned out to be about 30 pages and was very close to what actually ended up being on stage. And then
that's similar to the way musicals are written. You know, the book usually comes.
Yeah, it's like a libretto, basically. So then that is taken into our workshop process with the actors, and Jake and Chris are usually pretty clear going in on which pieces of the story will be designed through dialogue for the actors, and then we discover together how the rest of the action will take place and how to tell the rest of the story. So all of the stuff about photographs in the play, they carry around photographs of the lost children
and
the physical aspects of the cheerleading and the dancing, and there's a lot of music and all of that stuff all comes out of sort of the collective storytelling decision-making between Jake and Chris and I, and also in the rehearsal room with all the actors contributing.
And who did you do the blocking?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Okay. Tommy Rapley, our choreographer, and he's a better director than I am, Tom. But he's
an excellent choreographer. I don't know if you saw him. He's as a dancer too. He's in a Marriott show. He's very talented.
Absolutely, he's wonderful. He does the straight up dance choreography that you see. But as a cast and myself, we constructed basically like the basketball game and the major movement pieces. We would construct, and then Tommy would polish and set to counts and things like that. But most of the movement and staging stuff we did.
Besides being an actor, I know you made a major contribution to the show with the magic.
Oh, yes, there's a very fun magic trick that I'm hesitant to even talk about because I don't want to give it away.
Yeah, no, you can't.
It's a fun one at the end of the
show. Trust me on this, it's a good one. But I will ask you, way back, and we're going to get into this in a few minutes about how the house started.
Uh-huh.
But I'm still wondering about the Houdini trick. Several people told me when I said I was interviewing you, they said you've got to ask them about the Houdini trick. Describe that. You can describe that because it's a past show.
The trick, I sure can.
I'm sure you're not going to tell me how you
did it. Oh, no, absolutely not. No,
he doesn't know.
I would be, I have no idea, really. It was the water torture cell, which was a Harry Houdini escape, in which there would be a large tank of water that was probably 7 or 8 feet tall by 3 or 4 feet wide, just big enough for Harry to hang in.
It's like a phone booth.
A phone booth,
yeah, like a phone booth.
Full of water. And they would dunk Harry Houdini in it face first. So he would be lowered into it with his feet shackled into some stocks that are locked on the outside. Then the stocks are locked to the outside of the tank. So he's secured into the tank of water upside down with locks on all sides. They raise a curtain around it. And lo and behold, he escapes from the tank.
But you did that trick.
Yes, we did.
Four nights a week.
It's very exciting.
In
how
surround,
terrifying was that to do? You know, I realize everyone knows it's sort of a trick, but folks, I was sitting 2 feet away, and I was looking. I know there's no trap door.
No.
And with the lighting, I still don't know how you did it. And I was kind of tuned into it because I was warned that it was going to happen.
Uh-huh.
So, and I'll be damned, I still can't figure out how you did it.
Well, it's magic.
Yeah, of course. But, I mean, wasn't that terrifying for you?
It was. I had never done any escape work. I've been a magician all my life, but I'd never done any escapes. And so that was the first thing that I had tackled as a performer that was an escape. And certainly it being an underwater escape where you're locked on the outside, the first couple weeks with it were terrifying. But, you know, people were very nice to me and very patient as I requested to just hang in there and get used to it.
But there is that moment, right, when something could go wrong.
There is.
Where something could happen. I mean, I know everybody who's done magic has
said
that.
It starts when he goes underwater.
Yeah. And from that point on.
I see you smiling. You wouldn't do that, huh?
No. I mean, I'm sort of appalled at the idea that we all thought that was a good idea at the time, even. But of course it was, and Dennis did it every night, and we had a couple like really scary moments. Honestly,
I would think live theater.
I mean,
and you know, things go crazy. And that show was produced by us when we were just sort
22.
Of starting to get rolling. And
well, let's
we've
go
learned a lot about
it.
Production
yeah,
that helps
it.
Us out and things like that.
You guys, let's get the background. Let's rewind now to what, 2002 when you first... when you first guys moved up here, right?
Yeah.
So give us your background. You guys are all from where?
Southern Methodist University. Not all of us, but okay. but a good.
You two guys
of us.
Are from there.
Both of us are.
Okay.
That's
we
in
met.
Where Dallas, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What made you come up to Chicago?
Well, we consciously, you know, wanted to be the next branch in the Chicago Ensemble family tree, or you know, however you want to describe the lineage of the Chicago Renaissance in the 70s and Steppenwolf and Looking Glass, and then there would be the house, we thought. And so that's why we came here. Also, I was born in Champaign and lived in the suburbs till I was 9.
Okay,
so it was a comfortable place to come back to. I still have family here and stuff. And you know, it's the best place in the world to do this sort of thing, to be an ensemble theater and to work together.
I've been saying that for a long time. Yeah. That's true, because people are coming from all over the country.
Absolutely, and it's such a... it was.
Well, who are the original members now?
Well, there's 10 of us who are the originals, so
Dennis, you two certainly are two of the top guns, right?
We were Dennis and Matt Hawkins and I were, and Sean Fouch... then there's Johnny Arena and Marika Mashburn, and I'm sure I'm going to leave a bunch of people out, but there was 10 eventually of the originals. Philip Klaprick as well, who wasn't at SMU at the time, but whom I grew up with.
So you all basically knew one another
yeah.
and had, what, done college productions together?
Yeah, had done that sort of stuff together, and then I studied at the British American Drama Academy in London for my junior year. Dennis went the year after that for his junior year.
Uh-huh.
And we shared some influential teachers, and members of Teatro de Complicité taught classes there, as well as this woman, Selena Cadell.
Yeah, well, tell us about that, because that there's things you've done unique that other groups haven't done.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it is, I'm sure, in your background.
Yeah.
And do you think the London experience helped shape
Selena,
you guys?
Yeah. Selena was a big part of it. Selena Cadell is a wonderful actress in London, and was sort of a mentor to Dennis and I, and later to more of the group as well. But she really opened us up to the idea of how to incorporate the audience and use the audience in our work.
Well, that's certainly one of your trademarks.
So,
yes, it is. It was a big that idea and that concept that she really sort of nailed into us pretty well. It turned out to be a real.
She didn't teach it as an aesthetic either. She taught it as an ethic, as like something that the theater needed. So
she couldn't be more correct.
Yeah. So that was, I think, a major inspiration. And then that coming at the same time as having, you know, these physical theater classes with all these wonderful artists, and some of them from Teatro de Complicité, even was just kind of the mix of knowledge that then bringing that back to SMU and our like Stanislavskian training even just kind of created the mix of influences or whatever that made up at least our theater theory.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, Steven Spielberg has as much to do with who we are as anybody.
Oh, he does. He'd be flattered to hear that.
Oh, shoot.
I would like to think so.
I would like to think so too.
Of course. So your first show, the Terrible Tragedy of Peter Pan?
That was our second show. That Death and Harry Houdini we did first.
Oh, that's right. You did an original version.
At
did
Live
you do
Bait
the,
Theater.
Did you do that trick?
We did not do that trick.
Okay.
For you know, perfectly understandable reasons, they didn't want hundreds of gallons of water in their space over at Live Bait. So we were unable to do it the first time.
It's a tad small.
Yeah, it's a little small for that thing. So we didn't do the trick that time, but that was our first show. And then we moved to the Viaduct for the Terrible Tragedy of Peter Pan.
Now, everyone's asking me, let's clear the air. Is the Viaduct, do you guys own the Viaduct? Or is
No, we rent from them.
Uh-huh. And that's been working out for you, right?
Oh, it's great. It's wonderful. I mean, we're very lucky to have, to have had such a big hit there with Peter Pan. Like 8,000 people saw that show.
Is that
right? So 8,000 people saw the house in that space. And we've worked very hard to be able to like create a relationship with them where we can keep performing in that space because...
Well, I remember, folks, to show you how good the show was, it was about 120 degrees in the place in the summer, the night I...
Oh, so, my
and
gosh.
No one left.
No one left.
Houdini's
because we didn't have an intermission.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, we've well, given them the opportunity.
Still, I've seen shows they get up and walk out.
Right. Yeah.
No, and we've done shows in the heat in the viaduct since then that thank goodness the loyal audience has stuck through the heat. So,
well, sooner or later, maybe they'll figure out the air conditioning.
Sooner or later, we'll get our own spot. Too. Yeah. It's all coming. All in time.
All in time. That's well, but I like the spot because it's big and you can do a lot
and
with
it. And it doesn't feel like a theater. It feels
right.
It feels like a, you know, you walk into a funky warehouse space with a weird bar and stuff, and then the doors open and there's this, you know, party going on inside this.
So Terrible Tragedy played to 8,000 people. Wow.
Yeah, that's about right.
That's incredible.
5 months.
5 months. And then you, the next year you did Harry Houdini, right? The Death
and
Harry Houdini.
Remounted
it. It remounted it, and that's when I saw that.
Yes.
The night I was there, it was fabulous. And I remember the complaints people said, well, these guys do great theater. The only thing they do is you're never sure what's going to happen. Like this is these are the raps on the show. You never know what's going to happen, and it's innovative. And their shows you feel like you're part of the cast.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And that was the rap on it. And I'm saying, wow,
that's great.
It's like,
Well, by design, I hope so.
Yeah. And then what after that? Which came first, the Curse of the Crying Heart or Dave Da Vinci Saves the Universe?
Well, that Sam Valentino and the Melancholy Kid.
Oh, Sam. Okay, I'm looking at. All right, I'm out of order. All right, give me more. That's part of the trilogy, right?
That was part one. Yeah.
Okay. And what I got a kick out of was you started really incorporating a lot of rock music.
Uh-huh.
And you were like the everyman rock star.
I'll take that.
Rock star. Yeah. You should build it like that.
did you build it? No, you didn't.
No.
But what's cool about those shows is the audience responses were absolutely fantastic. I mean, when you guys would start up after, you know, kind of whipping up the audience with, you know, at the intro, turn off your cell phone, you get them all wound up, they were standing up and cheering like they were at a rock concert.
Well, they were.
Basically.
Yeah.
With a couple scenes in between numbers.
Right.
But so tell us about the creative process. How do you arrive at these shows? They're not musicals. They're not totally comedies. They're hybrids. They're unique shows.
Uh-huh.
So how does that process work?
It's evolving.
The process for it, I'd say, is something that we as a company and as an ensemble are constantly in conversation about. And my experience here, the process for each one has been very much its own animal, depending on the play and the people that are actually in the room. And, you know, the folks who are writing it or taking charge of the story, like especially for the trilogy, Nate or Jake and Chris and Nate for The Sparrow, bring what they've got into the room and the process pretty much.
Well, Dennis, you direct also.
I directed the trilogy for the house.
And you were able to whip this guy into shape?
We whip each other.
Yeah. definitely a two-way thing there.
Okay. Yeah. But do you consciously go for like humor in your shows? Or do you have like, well, we got to have so much humor, we got to have so much music, and then the physicality.
I don't know how conscious we are of like creating humor. I think we try and tell stories that we think we would like, and in ways in which we would like. I mean, that was kind of the founding precept was that there's not really a lot of theater out there for people in their 20s, and
so true.
You know, so there has to be a healthy mix of laughter and tears in there in order to...
Well, and a comic book flavor.
Yeah, for sure.
Kind of a cartoon flavor, which I think really works well.
For sure. Uh-huh. We try and stay in like the pop mythology a bit. Mm-hmm. So stories about superheroes definitely fit into that. But, you know, Dave Da Vinci was sort of a perfect, you know, like family tragedy set with time travel as one of the ingredients. So
and wasn't a suicide part of the
yeah, and teen suicide.
Yeah,
was,
teen
suicide,
yeah. And that's sci-fi and suicide are the two absolute no-nos. You never do in theater.
Right.
We did them both.
I think we do them almost every show.
And it was fun. And you made it work. Yeah.
Yeah. It was great.
And I mean, the caveman show. I mean, is this a conscious effort to always do an original show?
Absolutely. Oh, yes. Absolutely. We only do original work. And
I heard you quoted not too long ago saying, if you do Chekhov, it's time for you guys to move on.
Yeah, right. You can write us off as soon as we start doing Chekhov. It won't be the same anymore.
Well, how do you keep it fresh? I mean, you guys have done a dozen shows now, right?
Yeah. I think it's less about keeping it fresh than it is about we're still just getting started. A dozen shows is, I mean, maybe that sounds like a lot, but it's only, you know, 4 or 5 years worth of work.
Yeah, it's about 4 years.
Yeah, yeah, a company, okay. we're just getting a handle on the answers that we set out to find when we moved here with what kinds of stories do we want to tell and how do we want to tell them. And so it feels like we're right now at the beginning of figuring out what universe the house exists in and how the many voices in the company and in the ensemble fit within that.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it doesn't seem hard to come up with new ideas for stories to tell. It seems hard to
produce the plays.
Well, now, but in the development stage, like I noticed you vary who the writers are and the directors. Do you come up with a concept and then put it out there for who wants it? Like Dennis, if you have a idea for a show, do you say I'm going to write this one, or how does that work?
I don't know, maybe you should talk about that a little bit more, but like I feel like the when someone has something that they're working on or they're passionate about, that it is brought to the company, and the projects that go on in our season are picked from what people have and what they're working on and what they're excited about, and whatever seems to fit and make the best season with the people that are there. When we find the combination of the right project with the right people, then it happens.
Yeah, it is a conscious effort to make space for everyone and for their interests. As much as you want to be a smart producer of plays, and you know, and you need to invest in your infrastructure as a business organization and figuring all that stuff out and then learning how to produce, and then even on top of that, of course, learning how to be a better artist. The other thing is about. It's being an ensemble. It's not easy, and it's not. It's a major ingredient. So, how do you create a place where many voices can be heard and respected, and where all of the ideas and all of these, hopefully, you know,
you're surrounding yourself with wonderful people. On that, because I have seen a lot of theater groups come. They have one or two people, like this one does the writing, and mm-hmm. this one usually does the directing. And if they run out of ideas, it's over.
It's like being married to 30 people. I've never been married, but I assume that's what it's like, because
sounds like a future topic.
Yeah, you all have to, be supportive of each other and figure out how to get each other's best work out of each other. And I think that is our success at this moment is the Sparrow being even a conscious effort to. I have to quit saying conscious effort, but. To like design a process around those ethics, and we're, like I said, 5 years in, we're starting to get a handle on what universe we're in and what we do believe and what the house means and what we want our audience to get from coming to us, and so we're trying to design ways of being with each other, being creative with each other, and being a company together that support that.
Well, there must be a lot of respect among you guys for each other, because most. I've seen groups get together and they start having success, and then the egos get in the way, and there's a number of fights and arguments, and they break up.
Well, there's lots of fights and arguments, and
no egos whatsoever.
But I mean, that's part of the chemistry. That's part of what you have to figure out.
But I mean, eventually, do you come to a conclusion of who's going to do what, and everybody, you know,
we do, and I think that like. Nate was talking about it just a minute ago. There's a really strong drive in our company, especially right now and with the Sparrow, to focus on the way we work and the basic ideas of community that are all over the house and its product and its process. And we work very hard on maintaining a good, solid, communicative, and happy. Not always happy, but hopefully happy community.
Most of your original people are still with you, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know you've added some, but I mean, you have the core has been there through the battle, so it looks like that they're going to stick around for a while.
Oh, I hope so.
Let me ask you a couple of questions. All right. One is, I know Chris Jones wrote a great article about you guys, saying it's about time you guys move on or take one of your productions, meaning The Sparrow, onto, let's say, Broadway or to New York.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What do you guys think of that? I know you got to. I know you like got to buy Chris
Jones. Sounds like fun. Yeah.
You should buy him dinner one day. Oh, right. But other than that, I mean, have you thought about that?
Oh, all the time, of course. I mean, the point is to. The end, we're the House Theater of Chicago. The end game isn't to all move to New York and be famous. The end game is to create a community, as Dennis was saying, around the house, and to be a source of catharsis and theater and entertainment for the Chicago community. One of the ways to do that is to make a big name for yourself in New York and get on the national stage.
Steppenwolf. You know? I mean, the model he was using, I believe, was Steppenwolf.
Absolutely,
That just expands your.
Sure.
Well, let me ask you: Have any of your shows been? Have you licensed any of them out for any other theater groups to do in other parts of the country?
High school did Terrible Tragedy of Peter Pan because they brought Phil out to Little Rock, Arkansas, to watch it. so we let him do it. But we've been holding on to our properties because. We know that there's something will happen and it will open up for us to own all of them and to produce all of them again, or many of them, you know, so
like make tours of them.
Yeah. So
when
we reach that, yeah, but it's about getting the institution to that place where we have that kind of control and that kind of agency in the Chicago community. New York is one of the ways to get there. And it's thrilling that Chris is, so vocal about it because it's
he kind of threw the challenge at you, didn't he?
He certainly did, and we're excited about that as well. But you know, it's like I said all the time, it's coming, and we need to make sure that however we handle that success and what we do with these projects is an investment in the Chicago community as well, because that's where we're going to.
Okay,
to be.
And you have done a number of your shows. You've made DVDs of.
Sure. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Tell us about that. I mean, I think more groups should do that, but I know that's expensive. But it also, in the long run, that's really going to pay off for you, I think.
Yeah, it's fun. There's all kinds of extras and interviews with us. Like the extras on the Houdini DVD are awesome because Dennis talks about what it was like to do the Water Torture Cell and how we learned to do it and all of this stuff. So it's fun for our super fans or whatever who have the patience to sit through the
jibber-jabber.
How many of them have you produced? If they go to your site, right, they can order?
If you go to thehousetheater.com, you can order all of the ones that we have currently available.
There's like five or six.
Yeah, and there are five or six now. We continue to try to do them, to release them as often as possible. But
they're productions. They're not shot for... They're produced for the live audience, but they are videotaped.
They're videos of live performances. We'll have a multi-camera setup during the shows.
It's like watching great performances on PBS or something.
Yeah, I like
they're
that.
They're
I like
really
that.
Like
and that's a new art form because you're still playing to the audience. Uh-huh. So it isn't you're not just playing to the camera.
No, right? I mean you want totally we want to capture. I mean what the house does and one of its main goals of incorporating the audience and creating community around the play involves. That live element of it, that is what we do. It is live, and so we try to capture that as much as possible in the DVDs. Although that's a hard thing to do, but I mean that's why we certainly film them in the shows, where in the shots you can see the audience and sort of enjoy their reaction to the play as well.
Well, yeah, that adds a lot to it, and that's kind of a new art form. You're right, great performances, kind of the first ones to do it. Uh-huh. Now they're doing a lot more of them. Well, let's give a little plug for your show. Give us the phone number and you know what days you're playing. It's time for your little commercial.
We run 4 days a week. We're Thursday through Saturday nights at 8 p.m., Sunday nights at 7 p.m.
At
the Viaduct Theater, which is at 3111 Northwestern Avenue. It's at the Western and Belmont intersection, just south of Belmont Avenue on the east side of the street. There's a blinking red sign out there that says the Viaduct. You can get tickets from calling our ticket line, which is 773-251-2195. It's 773-251-2195. You can also buy tickets online at www.thehousetheater.com. That's theater spelled with an R-E. .com. Tickets are available there. You should make your reservations fast because we've sold a whole lot.
Yeah, I remember when I walked in, you guys were saying, man, we're almost sold. The run's almost going to be sold out pretty in the next few days or the next
week or so. I think pretty soon it's going to be totally sold out. It's what day is it today? Is it Monday?
Today's Monday.
It's Monday, and we've sold 65% of the run at this point. So they're going. So call now.
You know, so many young theater groups are wondering what you guys do besides producing good shows. Because I go to a lot of theaters that are storefronts that are doing good work. Uh-huh. Five people are there.
Uh-huh.
What advice could you give to groups to tap into the younger audiences?
Content is the first thing. Don't expect to get young audience doing old plays. Not old people plays.
I know,
but
Greek mythology and some of that.
Right. Look at one of our favorite TV shows right now, and sort of one of the inside influences and reasons we think this season is turning out so good is because we've all been watching Battlestar Galactica. And that's a perfect example of taking Greek mythology and Greek storytelling and applying it with a popular mythological mask.
So you got to figure out what your audience wants.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is probably what you want.
That's the thing. So thinking about, figuring out.
And you guys make it entertaining, too. I mean, there's an energy to your shows. Mm-hmm. But how about on the marketing side? Can you give me one quick marketing tip?
One quick marketing tip?
Dennis is the director of marketing.
Yeah, that's why I shot that one right at him.
The best marketing tip I can give is to put your energy and effort into creating a great product. When the product is great, it's very easy to market your work. But second to that, I would say the most important thing you can do is have constant contact with your audience, whether that be through emails or direct mail or face-to-face. You want to talk to those people, and you want to find out what they liked and what they didn't like, and you want them to
have some stake in your shows.
You want to sell the company and not the show. That's also was a turning point for us when we figured out that was the most important thing about branding. Anyway, I don't know if that's a marketing question, but
absolutely. The question for us, or what we want everybody to ask is have you been to the house, not have you been to the Sparrow?
Right. I've told a lot of people that, and I mentioned the house. I go, what are they playing? I go, it doesn't make any difference. You guys are in that. That's an elite category. Right. That it doesn't make any difference. You bet on the theater company.
Yes.
And that's quite frankly how most of us reviewers pick, if there's four shows opening on a day, and you, there's the bigger ones, obviously, like downtown, you got to go. Uh-huh. But other than that, when I'm trying to figure out, when I see what you guys are doing, forget it. The rest of them all, I'll pick another day. Because I know what you guys are going to do is going to be entertaining, and I want to be there on the cutting edge of being one of the first ones.
I hope we can keep that up.
Well, so far you've done whatever. I have never seen a bad show by you guys.
Oh, thanks.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That's great. We've had a few. Glad you didn't see them.
I don't know. There's always and that's talking about playing your audience. There's always something. Like every once in a while people say, well, I won't name any. There's something I didn't like on this or that, but the way you did it was so well. One of the shows, I brought an English friend of mine who's a real snob. Oh, I'll tell you which one it was. It was the Wizard of Oz.
The Great and Terrible Wizard of Oz.
Yeah,
which is going to open up at Northland.
Yes, I'm gonna see it again. But that's another thing you guys are doing. You're landing on that circuit too.
Yeah,
yeah, that's a good exposure for you. And those are maybe you'll keep that older audience awake for a show, which would be a
BJ Jones is pretty adamant that we try. So.
Yeah. Well, BJ's good man. But anyhow, my English snob friend, I said, I'm going to the house, and he goes, oh, I want to. I said, I don't know if the stuff is for you, because I should have had more confidence. But he says, I said, they're innovative. They violate the rules. They just do terrific entertainment. He says, that's what I'm looking for.
Great. Yeah.
And he loved it. Which I thought, and I mean, that was a major compliment, because this guy's like a, an Olivier type. He's an actor and everything, and he said, "Well, I got to tell him about that in London."
Well, fantastic! I hope he's telling them all.
Yes. Okay. We have to.
Before you go, can I say that I neglected to? This is me being a bad marketing director.
Okay.
I neglected to mention the three matinees that we have for the Sparrow.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Which are Sunday afternoons. They're Sunday, February 4th, 11th, and 18th. All
is this in addition
PM.
To?
They were not part of the normal run, but it is the first time that we have done matinees at the house, so we're anxious to see how they go. But
does that mean you're doing two in that day? Or
we will do two shows that day at 3 and 7 o'clock.
Well, on the 4th, they can come see your show, then see the Bears in the Super Bowl.
That's
right.
Yeah. That's right. Or, you know, if they want to, they can come see our show instead of going.
You're right. Yeah. That's what I'm doing. Yeah, you got to tape the Super Bowl. Although, and you don't watch it if they lose.
Right.
But I wouldn't worry about that. Last
question. The score might show up in the play, by the way.
Oh, it might show up.
So the fans will be updated. They don't have to worry about missing the defense.
All right. That'll work. All right. Last question, and I like to ask this of all groups. Where do you guys see yourselves in 5 years, both individually and the theater company?
In our own space.
Okay.
In our own space and producing and doing exactly the same thing, only better. So
yeah.
This is your passion.
Ownership is
and
what,
ownership. Okay.
Absolutely. I feel the same way. I think about that a lot. Being, you know, 28 years old and an artist, and I can't. Every time I think about it, I'm surprised by the fact that I don't want to be doing anything else. This is what I want to be doing, and it's wonderful. Right. And I hope that in 5 years, I'm lucky enough to still be doing it with these people.
Well, I know you're doing a magic show coming up because we interviewed Michael Garver. And she said you're gonna. When she said a magic show, and I said, would Dennis Watkins be? She goes, that's who's going to be the star of it.
Oh, fantastic!
You've got that coming up.
Yeah,
too,
that should be a fun one.
Yeah, I can. I love magic shows, so we'll.
It should be a blast. Uma's doing that show. Yeah. It should be really, really fun.
Well, thanks a lot, guys. You guys are one of the best examples of Chicago theater and
it's
all about. And folks, just if it says the House Theater of Chicago on it, just go see it. The name doesn't make any difference.
Thank you, Tom. We're very
flattered. The current one is the Sparrow, but I know you've got a lot of great stuff coming up.
Cool.
We do.
Well, thank you very much for your time. And folks, remember, go see a play this week. Thank you.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to another exalted episode of the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of January 29th, 2007. Kathleen Turner and Bill Irwin are coming to Chicago to star in Edward Albee's Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? This theatrical classic will be playing at the LaSalle Bank Theater as part of a five-city, five-month national tour starring the two acclaimed actors. The show will open on March 27th and run through April 8th, and tickets are currently on sale. They went on sale last Friday, so you need to hurry and get your tickets soon. As many of you may remember, Bill Irwin earned the 2005 Tony Award for Best Actor in a Play for his performance as George in the Broadway production. Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf in total received six 2005 Tony Awards, including Best Actor, Best Actress, Best Revival of a Play, and Best Costume Design. Also, in that same year, Bill Irwin received a special Tony Award for Lifetime Achievement, which is not that easy to get. You can see both Kathleen Turner and Bill Irwin in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, the Edward Albee Classic, starting on March 25th at the LaSalle Bank Theater. The 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee is going to have another adults-only performance on February 23rd. That's right, Spelling Bee, currently running at the Drury Lane Theater Water Tower Place, will have another Forbidden Material night, just as they did back on January 12th. That performance was a clear sellout, so why not do it again? The night has been dubbed Parent-Teacher Night, and the material is so spicy that it would cause the cast to break out laughing on the stage. Remember, Spelling Bee will be closing its curtains on March 27th, and February 23rd will be a rare time to see this adult-only forbidden material. Get your tickets soon. Tribune Stage Ticker is reporting that Barbara Gaines of the Chicago Shakespeare Theater has timed out the opening of her production of Troilus and Cressida to Shakespeare's birthday. That, incidentally, is April 23rd, but I'm sure all of you knew that. Troilus and Cressida is on the slate for the Chicago Shakespeare Theater's season, so stay tuned to Talk Theater in Chicago's news podcast for more information. Talk Theater in Chicago would like to congratulate August Wilson for being inducted to the American Theater Hall of Fame. Now, we are aware that he did pass away last year, but his shows are always a staple here in Chicago. And as a nice coincidence to commemorate the night, Congo Square Theater Company will be opening up its production of Joe Turner at the Goodman Theater. Congratulations, August Wilson. Well, thank you very much for listening to this exalted episode of the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. We have come to the end of the news, but before we let you go, it's time for your Shakespeare Quote of the Week. The following quote comes from The Tempest, Act 4, Scene 1. We are such stuff as dreams are made on. Well, thank you very much for listening to our podcast. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready to stick in your ears. So, until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.
Listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago Review Podcast, The Sparrow, created and performed by The House, conceived and directed by Nathan Allen, with words by Chris Matthews and Jake Minton, at Viaduct Theater, review by Tom Williams. In a show that reminds me of the kind of polished, sophisticated work that one finds at Looking Glass Theater, Nathan Allen and the gang at the House Theater of Chicago has advanced their theater craft with a most engaging and intelligent new fable, The Sparrow. This smart, well-crafted show may be the finest work the House has mounted to date. A new twist on the everyman superhero, the tragic one is Emily Book, a young orphan girl from Spring Farm, Illinois. The dark tale features the nerdy Emily and her mysterious telekinetic powers in a fable of tolerance, forgiveness, and compassion. This is a pure ensemble-based work that continues the House's tradition of excellent production values, with an amazing score by Kevin O'Donnell, together with terrific movement and choreography by Tommy Rapley, and innovative staging by director Nathan Allen. The show centers around Emily and her classmates with the guidance of popular teacher Dan Christopher, played by the charismatic Cliff Chamberlain, as they complete their high school year. We see Emily's attempt to fit in as her classmates move to welcome her into their world. The show is filled with rich, heartwarming humor and sweet moments that are dramatically fulfilling with many unpredictable plot twists. The show has excellent use of videos and background music to underscore and move the story along, giving depth to its mood and atmosphere. There are several thrilling dances and energetic depictions, such as a high school basketball game and a biology class, as well as stellar allusions to Emily's telekinetic powers. This slick spectacle has magic elements that feed the mystery of Emily's past. This flawed superhero teen girl unfolds as a memorable and fully developed character. Carolyn Defrin, as Emily, delivers a muted, subdued superhero, giving Emily empathy and a genuine niceness that wins us. Terrific work from Defrin. The entire ensemble complemented the story deftly. Cliff Chamberlain and Paige Hoffman as Jenny were especially effective. The Sparrow is a refreshingly strong story told with terrific production values that blends humor, music, and drama into a thrillingly clever theater piece. Kudos to the House Theater of Chicago as they continue to expand their theatrical craftsmanship. Their ensemble gives new meaning to daring collaborative efforts. The Sparrow soars. Highly recommended. The Sparrow, created and performed by The House, conceived and directed by Nathan Allen with words by Chris Matthews and Jake Minton, at Viaduct Theater, located at 1131 Northwestern Avenue. For tickets and more information, please call 773-251-2195.
Thank you very much for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Dennis Watkins and Nathan Allen for giving us the honor of interviewing them this week. I would also like to thank Tom Williams and Mark Meyer. without whom this podcast would not be possible. And also, I would like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode, ready for your listening pleasure. So until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Mote, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.